Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, something in you, it jitters like a moth. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick. So, we've talked about robots plenty of times on this podcast.
Sure, we
More
have.
Than plenty of times, probably.
Right, we've talked about them too many times.
Yeah.
Is what you're getting at.
Yes. I'm saying that we should never do another episode about robots ever again.
But you know, there's something else we've talked about a few times that, or at least you two have talked about a few times. I've only talked about it the one time, which is bugs.
Well,
and to be fair, I wasn't really talking about bugs that last time either. It was spiders.
Well, the future of insects is clearly the most important type of future to talk about.
But I thought that maybe, you know, Joe, I know Joe hates robots because when I bring up the subject of robots near Joe, he gets this red look in his eye and he says, "Programmed to destroy." I don't know what that's all about. But anyway, I know he loves bugs, and I thought maybe we could ease you back into the robot discussion, Joe, by talking about a combination of bug and robot.
I think that's a great idea, and I've even got a sort of practical way to introduce the discussion.
Okay.
Okay.
So, making robots is hard, right? Making a good mobile robot to go around and do different kinds of things, it's not easy.
Sure. Mechanics alone are incredibly complex, and designing a machine that can do the sort of stuff that we do is not a trivial task.
Okay, now let's make the problem even harder.
Okay.
Let's make that robot really small.
Okay.
Oh. So now you've massively compounded the problem.
Right. Yeah, because anything that's bulky or heavy is going to be a lot, you know, more impossible to include.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Right.
power sources.
Exactly. Right. Batteries and or solar panels, all kinds of things like that.
Cameras.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Any kind of mechanism that creates movement, any sort of engine, yeah.
Even just the computer equipment.
Sure.
You know, that has weight, takes up space. Okay, now let's make it even harder.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Let's make it smart. Let's say that it needs to make some kind of decisions based on its environment. So it's going to need sensors of some kind to gather data about where it is, and it's going to need a pretty robust computing system to be able to make decisions based on that data.
So you're just, now you're making an impossible task here, right?
Wait, I'm going to make it even more impossible.
What?
Okay, let's say it's
got to
be.
Joe, why do you hate us?
It's got to be small and smart, and it's got to carry its own energy source for a decent amount of time. You know, not something that's going to run out of juice in 90 seconds.
Okay, so now you're talking about something that you can't just power externally. Like, you know, we've talked about nanobots a little bit in the past. One of the common solutions I see to nanobots, because this is a problem when you get down to that size, how do you power something like that, is the idea of using an external source like electromagnetism or ultrasonic frequencies. Mm-hmm. But you are saying that
some
this
of these
one,
even actually just have wires on them and they try not to show them in the pictures.
Right, exactly.
They really do.
Yeah, they really do. So you are actually saying that this would need to be a robot that would carry with it its own ability to you know, power itself.
Right, whether that be, say, solar panels or a battery or whatever it is, that's going to take up space and make this all really difficult. But you know what? We've already touched on it now that there's something in existence that fits pretty much all of these criteria reasonably well, and that's an insect.
Yeah.
It's small. It's smart. I mean, it's not that smart, but it's...
It's relatively, for its size,
right.
Pretty...
It's smart in the robot sense.
Right, yeah. Know. Compared to, say, a wind-up toy that only will go in one direction until it knocks into something, it's smart.
Yeah, and it carries its own energy. You don't even have to plug it in. You just feed it some apple slices or some delicious, you know, bodily fluids, whatever it likes to chow down on. Different insects have different tastes.
That's fair.
And this is not an idea original to us. In fact, the people way up there hidden in their scary science bunkers are going exactly down this path, aren't they?
Yeah, it's the idea of marrying insects with robots, not literally. I mean, you're actually just, you're incorporating robotic elements into an insect. You're not actually having an insect get married to
like
a robot.
Like a cyborg.
A cybug.
A
cybug.
A bug-borg.
A bug-borg.
Insect-borg.
So... we're letting it get away from us. Just like a bug would. No, this is entirely true. There have been many, many projects to look into how can we take advantage of the fact that the Earth is covered with lots and lots of insects. And if we could only bend them to our will, then we would have an incredible tool for things like search and rescue. Mm-hmm. And that was part of what inspired the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency.
Why
also
do
known
we
as,
say that every time? It's just DARPA.
It's
well,
DARPA.
Because people want to know what DARPA stands for.
No, they don't. It's DARPA.
When I hear DARPA, I think, is that an acronym? It's responsible for a lot of the technologies that have filtered down from the military into our daily lives. Stuff that, you know, was originally part of the DARPA project. Like the internet is a great example. The internet was originally a DARPA project. That's where ARPANET came from. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's also responsible for some kind of scary science fiction-y horror movie type of science, including turning bugs into cyborgs. So their program is specifically called the Hybrid Insect Microelectromechanical Systems, or HIMEMS, because I guess that's slightly better than surgery on cockroaches.
You're not inflecting it right. It's HIMEMS.
No, okay. HIMEMS. So the goal is to create cybernetic insects. And here's a quote from the DARPA solicitation document. This was written back in 2006 when the project was started. DARPA seeks innovative proposals to develop technology to create insect cyborgs, possibly enabled by intimately integrating microsystems within insects during their early stages of metamorphoses. The healing
process. So getting them when they're young.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, it continues. The healing processes from one metamorphic stage to the next stage are expected to yield more reliable bioelectromechanical interface to insects as compared to adhesively bonded systems to adult insects. Once these platforms are integrated, various microsystems payloads can be mounted on the platforms with the goal of controlling insect locomotion, sense local environment, and scavenge power.
So what all this is saying basically is that if you put these little bits into these insects when they're still growing, it will allow us to integrate the technology more fully into them as adults than it will be to just be like, I pasted a computer on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Though there's plenty of room for pasting computers on, as we will see later in this very podcast.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. Yeah, especially if you happen to watch that 15-minute video.
We'll get into that later. Yeah, but what is the actual goal? What do they want these insect robot hybrids to do?
Right. What was the challenge?
All right. Here's the from that solicitation. The final demonstration goal of the HIMEMS program is the delivery of an insect within 5 meters of a specific target located 100 meters away using electronic remote control and or global positioning system, GPS. Although flying insects are of great interest, e.g. moths and dragonflies, hopping and swimming insects could also meet final demonstration goals.
Why not crawling, though?
Well, I'm sure that was also in there. It just wasn't specifically mentioned. In conjunction with delivery, the insect must remain stationary either indefinitely or until otherwise instructed. The insect cyborg must also be able to transmit data from DoD relevant sensors, yielding information about the local environment. These sensors can include gas sensors, microphones, video, etc.
You can kind of get the sense based on the language in the DARPA directive that they're thinking about surveillance.
Yes.
I think that seems to be the main thing in their minds is we want to get bugs that can go out and look at what's going on over there 100 meters away and see what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. See what's up.
Now that surveillance may be something, you know, clandestine, like spying, mm-hmm. or more likely something like search and rescue or, you know, you're getting some reconnaissance in an area that would be dangerous to send human beings into.
Or that you're not sure whether it's dangerous to send human beings into.
Right.
Rather than sending out red shirts, we can send out bugs.
Well, especially for something like an area that's got radioactive contamination, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bugs are much more hardy at resisting that than we humans are. So using a bug in order to check that kind of area out makes perfect sense.
This makes a lot more sense than what I was thinking they would use them for, which is delivering ammunition. When you run out of bullets on the field, a swarm of beetles come at you with cartridges. Each one has one. They drop it into your magazine.
Yeah, no, that's probably further down the road. That's a little ambitious for this first project. Actually, it's pretty ambitious anyway. Yeah. A lot of the stuff we've talked about or that we've looked into as part of the research for this podcast, we're still in the relatively early stages of this kind of technology. And meanwhile, you've got other people working on different approaches, but I'll talk about that toward the end of the podcast. It's just interesting to me that now we're starting to see the fruition of some of this work. And as of the recording of this podcast in early November 2014, there have been a couple of stories that have come out about stuff like this, which is kind of interesting. I mean, it's 8 years after the initial solicitation.
Well, I think we should talk about a few examples of the research in blending the insect with the robotic. Obviously, we can't talk about all the research today. There's too much, but I think we should pick a few of the cool ones and zero in on those. The first one I would like to talk about is beetles.
So in this case, we're talking about the insect,
not the band.
Beetleborg.
Okay.
That is a very specific cultural reference, Joe.
You are extremely fixated upon this cultural reference.
I may have watched the YouTube video with the main credit sequence of that show several times yesterday and today. I wanted to arrange some harmonies where we'd each sing a part, you know, Big Bad Beetle Borgs. But...
yeah, that didn't come together.
It just didn't happen.
It was a cultural reference that was lost on me, to be perfectly honest.
Okay. Let's talk about using beetles as these hybrid micro-electro-mechanical systems.
Okay.
The example would be flower beetles, the ones I want to look at. That's flower with a W, not with an O-U.
Okay.
All right.
So this example is a project that was part of the High MIMS Directive. And it was a group of researchers from UC Berkeley who created a system to steer the flight path of cyborg flower beetles like Mechanorina torcata. I hope I said that right. Mechanorina torcata, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That sounds good. Yeah,
sounds
yeah.
good to me.
And Cotinus texana. And so flower beetles are a group of scarab beetles, and they're thought to make good candidates for flying cyborgs because of their size and sort of the robustness, like they're thick and powerful.
AKA they're basically terrifying.
Yeah.
So they can also carry a lot of weight.
Exactly right. So you can put a bunch of equipment on them and they'll still be able to fly. Google these things if you want. They are not spindly, especially M. torcata, the bigger one. They're pretty thick, pretty
terrifying.
Cool. Yeah. So the researchers at Berkeley built an electronic system consisting of, quote, neural stimulators, muscular stimulators, a radio transceiver-equipped microcontroller, and a microbattery. So that's the first two things there would be the means of stimulating the parts of the beetle to get it to do what you want. Mm-hmm. Then you've also got the transceiver. That's to get the commands from the beetle command center. And then you've got the micro battery, which is to power the whole thing.
Okay.
So that's kind of a lot of equipment to put on one insect. But did it work? Yeah, it did. The beetles could fly. So they put the system together and they mounted it on the beetle's pronotum, which if you picture like a dog or a cat, that would sort of be the back of the neck, top of the head area. Mm-hmm. It's sort of
they have a neck?
You're talking about beetles.
Oh, yeah.
Not really. It's just sort of like the...
It's that the, same area, though. It's sort of like the human equivalent of the nape
gotcha.
Of the neck, I suppose.
Right. Yeah. Right. Not the front of the face, but right back up there.
Right.
Front. Okay. So they mount that right back up there, and then they used remote radio signals to stimulate parts of the beetle bodies for various aspects of flight control, including the ability to, quote, control flight initiation and cessation, modulate flight throttle and direction with a relatively simple interface. And those quotes are from their paper in Frontiers in Integrative Neuroscience in 2009 called Remote Radio Control of Insect Flight. So there are YouTube videos of this. I recommend looking it up and watching them because it's pretty cool. They had reasonably good success with using radio to control beetle flight patterns.
That was, by flight patterns, do you mean like... basically telling them to go left or right? Or how finely tuned were the flights? I haven't watched these videos.
I couldn't speak from experience. I mean, it's hard to tell how exactly what they're doing compared to what the Beatles doing, but it is divided into like left and right signals.
Right.
And I think also making the Beatle fly or getting it to stop.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of videos actually that do the left or right. That's the essential command, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have a go forward or stop in a lot of these. It's more that, you know, they let the bug run and then they determine which direction the bug will run in.
Right. And for the flight, it really does seem directional. Like I haven't seen any, you know, like let's control pitch and yaw and all those flight things that pilots know about.
And one thing we should point out is that a lot of this work isn't just to figure out how to control insects, but also to learn more about how insects fly and how they control their flight. And that there's a biological element to this. It's not just computer science or robotics or anything like that as well.
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah, you have to have a really good understanding of how the system works. And luckily, insects are relatively simple. But, you know, flight really does put an extra kind of wrinkle into this entire endeavor, which I think is why insects like roaches have been the focus of a lot of study.
Also, yeah. It's really easy to get a hold of them.
There's a few running around, probably at any given time.
Yeah, well, let's
first give that a good hard think.
Yeah,
and then
now that we're skeeved out, it's time to really turn up the creep factor for the rest of this conversation. Let's talk about robo roaches.
Okay, well, I want to talk eventually about roachborgs for search and rescue, or what I call search and roach skew.
Yeah, I see that. I saw that in the notes. I wasn't gonna.
I see what you did there. Yeah,
but before I get to that, because that's a fairly recent development, I want to talk about RoboRoach, the insect cybernetics that comes straight into your home.
Yeah.
Do y'all know about this?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. There was that whole Kickstarter, right?
Yeah. Well, before, I think they existed before that, but the Kickstarter was a big source of controversy, but they made their funding. We should go back and tell the story. So there's a little education tech company called Backyard Brains, with the tagline "Neuroscience for everyone."
Yay!
Yeah, they're
brain implant.
They say
yay.
Their point being that not everybody has access to a university with like an incredibly robust neuroscience laboratory.
That's a good point.
And that, you know, people who want to learn things might want to be able to do some experimentation and kind of get, you know, more involved in the field, even if they don't have that direct access. And so that's kind of the goal. Now, a lot of that goal gets played out in doing some home surgery on bugs.
Right. So this project that they initiated is called RoboRoach.
Yeah.
And it's a cybernetic modification kit for cockroaches, which allows users to perform surgery on a cockroach and implant electrodes into the cockroach's antennae that use electrical pulses to stimulate the neurons in those antennae.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why would you want to stimulate the neurons of the antennae in a cockroach?
Because that's how they steer.
That's exactly right. You can control cockroach movement if you can control the nerve cells in each antenna.
Right. It's not precisely how they steer, but rather how they take in information from their antenna and use that to decide when to turn. Because, you know, they'll be brushing up against something and go like, I'm hitting a wall on my right, so I should veer a little bit more to the left, vice versa.
If you were to install, say, an electrode that would stimulate such a response to say, there's a wall here, even if there isn't a wall there, you can make the cockroach turn.
Right. It's like electric reins.
Yeah. And it's disturbing to watch.
Right. So in the RoboRoach kit, these electrical impulses come from a 4.4 gram electronic backpack unit. They call it a backpack. And this backpack can be controlled through Bluetooth by an app on your smartphone. Simply swipe your finger across the cockroach illustration in the desired direction, and the cockroach will turn. It'll send a little electrical charge to the right antenna or the left antenna, and it'll make it say, hey, no, go the other way.
Right.
Though not permanently, right?
No, the creators claim that this usually only works for some number of minutes at a time, after which the cockroach sort of gets used to the false signals and ignores them. And then you have to give it a rest and just not mess with it for a while before the roach is ready to be mind-controlled all over again.
Now, did you watch the 15-minute instructional video of how to do this?
No.
No, I watched some videos. I don't think I watched one that was 15 minutes long.
I did. I'm going to give you a rundown on how this works.
Oh, okay.
So,
oh, I did watch some on how the surgery works.
Yeah, you probably saw some of this then.
Okay.
So you start off by, you have to sedate the cockroach by putting it into cold water, which lowers its temperature, and it's a cold-blooded animal. So once its temperature is at a certain level, its activity essentially stops. It's still alive. It's just,
It's not wiggling around, yeah. And it's hypothetically not feeling anything.
Yeah, it's hypothetically not feeling anything anyway, but specifically not feeling, at least not pain as we would understand it. At any rate, then you take some sandpaper and you rub the top of the back of its head so that you can make it a little bit rough.
You create like an abrasive surface so that you can apply glue.
Yep, super glue. Super glue. They have a specific brand they recommend.
Okay.
You then attach the little circuit board, the backpack, onto the super glue. Then you have to do some crazy alterations of the cockroach. One of that is you have to poke a hole in its outer shell, I guess you could
say.
Yeah, the carapace off to the – little bit off to one side so you don't hit its esophagus because obviously you don't want to do that. And then you put the ground antenna about a millimeter in there, put some super glue onto the end of that, and then shove it in a little further so that way it holds itself tight. Then, after you knock out the cockroach a couple more times because it's going to wake up eventually, you then have to clip off the end of an antenna about down to about a quarter to an eighth of an inch, insert the, electrode, like the left electrode into the left antenna, and use some super glue so it holds inside there. Same with the right antenna. And then you have to kind of group all that together so you get the wires out of the way and you tamp that down. And then you glue that down as well so that way it doesn't get out there and snag on stuff as the roach is
running
around.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just gave you a very short description of what goes on in this 15-minute long video that I watched immediately after I had just eaten lunch, and I thought, well, that was a mistake. and then they demonstrate the app working, and they have a little roach running around on the ground and then make it turn left and right. And it turns very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it works. It looks like it must have felt like it was crashing into something. It's like, no, over here. Which is kind of, I mean, it's hard to read the feelings of a cockroach, but a lot of people were very upset by this.
Oh, especially when they launched that Kickstarter campaign that I mentioned at the top of this section.
Yeah, the Kickstarter campaign, it met its goal. It was at 10,000 and it got funded up to 12,000 bucks, I think. But there was a lot of outcry. I personally don't know what to think about it because on one hand, I agree just intuitively it seems kind of cruel and like
and
a mad scientist
creepy
kind of
thing. Weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
They had a lot of defenses, I guess I can get into in a minute. On the other hand, though, from my feelings, if I see a cockroach in my house, I'm going to kill it. I'm going to do everything I can to destroy this creature.
Yeah, it's not the kind of critter that when you see it in your house, you think, oh, I can cohabitate with this.
And so I wonder if the same is true of all these other people. Like if most people making the charge, like this is cruel, cockroaches are for stomping on.
Yeah.
End their lives quickly. Don't prolong their suffering.
Right.
Maybe, yeah.
Oh, I'm not sure. I mean, either way, I can see both sides of that.
Yeah. So they still sell the kit on their website. The people behind the project have answered some of the charges by claiming that, well, I mean, for one thing, they say this is for education. It's not just for giggles. It's for a good purpose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They also claim that the users are instructed to perform the surgery under anesthesia. So, the cockroach, not the surgeon.
Oh, I was about to ask. Like, that seems like the wrong kind of doctor to go to.
Yeah, I've seen Little Shop of Horrors. Yeah. That didn't go well for most people.
They have also, they've also claimed that the electrical stimulation doesn't translate as pain for the cockroach.
Right.
It's just like a sensation, like you're supposed to go that way.
It's just terrifying panic.
Maybe. I don't know.
They didn't
say
that,
like,
no.
What's it like to be a cockroach?
You would really have
to
ask.
What do you know, Jonathan?
Kafka.
I was going to say the same thing, yeah. I haven't had that metamorphosis, so.
they also say the procedure is not supposed to kill the cockroach, and at the end of the experiment, they recommend clipping the electrodes off, returning the roach to a breeder colony so it can return to being its roachy little self and not just do what the man says for the rest of its life.
Our friend Christian Sager actually interviewed one of the people behind this thing, one Greg Gage, I believe. And you can see a video of that interview if you Google Stuff of Genius Backyard Brains. I think that's the easiest way to get to it, probably, rather than me reading out a long URL for you to type into a computer. So if you're interested in seeing more of their perspective on why and how they created these kits, then definitely go check that out.
Did you guys also happen to see the Spiker Box kit that they sell?
I saw that, but I didn't read about it.
But wait, there's more?
Yeah, so Spiker Box, this is a little different. It's a little bit of a tangent, but just a little bit. It's another way of studying neurological activity. This is a way of studying the neurological activity of an invertebrate. They specifically use a roach as the example. And in this case, they anesthetize the roach, same sort of thing. They put it in the ice water. And then they just gently cut off one of its legs.
Okay.
Which they then say will grow back. The leg will grow back. So it's, you know, it's one of those
things.
You're
not crippling it for its roachy life.
It doesn't need to get a very specific pair of crutches so it can make its way through its roachy existence. But then what they did was they used the leg and attached the electrodes that they had to the leg, which surprised me that it was to the leg, not to the cockroach.
Not to the roach, right. Okay.
And that the leg has neurons in it that are still active even after being taken off of the rest of the insect. And that you can even hear, like it translates that into noise that you can listen to. You can touch the leg and the noise increases.
Huh.
Like the leg has detected the touch. And that you could even get an app that connects to this kit that translates it into like a waveform. So you can see the waveform increase as stimulus affects this leg. And I just thought, well, that's creepy too.
yeah. This is reminding me of our Frankenstein episode, actually.
Yeah.
But all of this, they do stress is in the interest of promoting science, especially in children. You know, people who, again, right, don't have access to giant university labs and who might not otherwise become interested in this kind of thing without chopping the legs off of cockroaches at a young age.
Right. Now, Joe, you were talking earlier about this search and roach skew idea. I'm curious and would like to hear more.
Allow me to paint you a little picture.
Please do.
I should first say what the research is. So the researchers are from North Carolina State University.
A.K.A. Mad Science U, it shall forever be known now.
They're led by a Dr. Alper Boskert, or at least he's the one I've seen associated with
right.
all these
studies. Yeah, he's an associate professor there.
And they've been working on the creation of cyborg cockroaches that can do things like be guided to stay within a digitally created fence or a fenceless boundary, I think they called it.
Mm-hmm.
So if they sort of like crawl around in a little area and then they reach the outer boundary, it's kind of like the invisible fence for your dog. It'll turn them back. Or they can track and recognize sounds based on high-definition microphones mounted on their little cockroach bodies.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that the invisible fence one is done using a Microsoft Kinect.
Mm-hmm.
So the Kinect itself tracks where the bugs are, and there's a border that the Kinect can see, and that's considered to be the one that the bugs can't cross.
Yeah.
And if the bug gets toward there, then the Kinect automatically sends a signal either to turn left or to turn right, whichever way is most attuned to the bug's orientation at that point. And the bug turns and goes back into the middle of the circle.
Exactly right.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's also super, super creepy to watch on video.
So the creators call them biobots, but I'm just so partial to Roachborg that I'm going to keep calling them Roachborg. Like, you know, we are the Roachborg. Lower your shields.
Yeah.
You will be scuttled upon.
We should say that
resistance is futile.
They have not, so far as I know, been able to link them together into a network. But when they do, it's game over, folks.
Right. But this Roachborg system isn't just for fun and education. The creators imagine it could save lives in a disaster area, such as like a collapsed building. So imagine your nearest shopping mall has collapsed after an earthquake or something.
Okay. All right.
And there are people trapped under the rubble, and we need to find them and get them out as soon as possible.
Sure.
Well, so here's where your Roachborg come in. At the disaster site, you bring in your Roachborg cube, and you open it up and have them stream out of it.
Uh-huh.
And this fleet of cockroaches are all wearing little cyborg backpacks. and they crawl throughout the collapsed structure seeking out the sound of trapped humans. The high-definition microphone capabilities allow their controllers, or even the cockroaches themselves, to distinguish between the sound of someone crying for help and the sound of a piece of concrete falling or any other kind of sound. And if they start to crawl away from where the action is, the invisible fence can turn them around and point them back where they need to be.
I've also heard that they could help a rescue team map the environment, like identifying where the wreckage has fallen and what areas might be impassable. And, you know, like, sure, it would take a whole swarm of these roach Borgs in order to do this, following walls the way that you would if you're, like, trying to run a maze,
sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And the way that would work is that they would record each little antenna bump that they experience through basically the same technology that controls those robo-roaches, just mm-hmm. turned around on itself so that it's sending the signals back rather than accepting signals.
Yeah, so instead of controlling the roaches, it's learning from the roaches where the barriers are.
Oh, right, exactly.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So, you know, it can make it a lot safer for human rescuers who eventually would go in. It would take time, but all in the name of safety for everyone.
Sure. If you get a chance, here's another thing to look for on YouTube. The videos of the roach experiments conducted at North Carolina State in
Mad Science U.
You should check this out. Just Google it. They've got roaches going through mazes, roaches being steered around, roaches inside the invisible fence.
Roaches responding to sound so that makes them turn the correct way.
But yeah, you know, if you also attach to them sensors that can detect like chemicals or radiation or something like that, then you get into that territory of making these a really integral part of a rescue team for something like a nuclear reactor accident.
Absolutely. Yeah. You could imagine this being used in like the Fukushima disaster and being able to tell very quickly, if there were people that need a rescue, and two, how dangerous is the environment that you have to go into, and thus make the proper preparations in order to get them out.
Yeah.
Right. So if you have this equipment, though, I'm wondering if you have this equipment like a high definition microphone or something like that, and you need them to search a large area, how do you provide continuous power for that long?
Well, you need some kind of onboard power source. And to help solve this problem, researchers at Case Western Reserve University have been working on a biofuel cell that taps into roaches' natural digestive systems to create a battery. Yeah, they use a couple enzymes to break down sugars that the roaches produce during their own digestion, which then release electrons and power a little battery.
That's really cool.
The last time I heard anything about it was 2012, at which point the battery was not powerful enough to be useful in the field without having some kind of rechargeable battery attached to the backpack kit, which would kind of nullify the purpose of having a biocell in the first place. But it's
well, it works, but the cockroach can't move anywhere. It's just kind of tethered to this enormous battery.
But it's a pretty cool concept, and I think that they're trying to tweak it in order to get it to be more useful.
Right.
Yeah. I think the NC State idea was using solar panels, wasn't it?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure if they do use the solar panels or not. I know that the Robo Roach was using just a tiny like cadmium battery.
Yeah.
But I don't know about the NC State stuff.
Sure, that doesn't last all that stuff. Long. But.
Yeah. Well, going back to Mad Science U and Dr. Boskert, Mothbots, like they're not just playing with cockroaches over there. They're playing with other invertebrates as well.
Tell me, hit me.
So they have proposed a method for implanting electrodes in a moth during the pupal stage while it's in the cocoon.
So like DARPA was talking about with getting him early.
Yeah, the idea of getting the sensors get embedded into the insect very early. That gives the tissue the chance to heal around it.
These are scientific cocoon robbers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just, if you're going to make an army of robotic moths, you gotta get them when they're young. You know, before they've really formed their ideology. It's really important. It's so that you get it when the insect is still the caterpillar before it undergoes metamorphosis. And it allows for remote control of the muscles that control flight in moths. But the end goal of that particular approach would be to create a literal swarm network of biobots, similar to what we were talking about earlier with sending a swarm in to a disaster area to kind of map it out.
Mm-hmm.
Same sort of idea. But this way you would have an aerially based network of sensors to explore areas that might not be safe for humans, which is kind of cool. So like a cloud of sensors that is mobile.
Yeah, we've talked about using swarm robotics in the past before, say, for example, in exploring other planets or mm-hmm. exploring asteroids and stuff like that. It has a lot of advantages. One of them is redundancy. Another one is that you can use algorithms to sort of average out the different things they experience
the data,
and create
right.
the full picture.
Yeah, and a lot of the information that they're looking at right now is not necessarily to have – like, it's not like the next step is going to be to have this swarm network. It's more like we're learning about the flight mechanics of moths right now so that we can make sure that if you want a moth to turn left, you send the proper signals for the moth to turn left. Because until you know how that works, you can't just say, all right, we'll just power the left wing. That's not going to help.
It's not going to get you very far, no.
Yeah. So the neat thing is that they're actually learning about the biology and the physiology of moths in flight. And they're trying to use that as a way to get to this end goal. And it also means that other scientists who may not be looking at the biological element of this, maybe they want to create purely mechanical robots, can still look at the study and learn from it.
Yeah, sure. Because there is that question of you know, like maybe if we're in the end entirely skeeved out by putting bugs to our own uses.
Yeah,
then
we could do the synthetic ones.
Mm-hmm.
Or even if it's not a question being skeeved out, it might just be a question of which pathway ultimately is going to get us to where we need to be the fastest
sure.
and most efficient mm-hmm. Way possible.
Right. And the thing is right now, insects have a huge head start.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Biology,
they already have hardware and software that's very lightweight and strong and useful.
Right. So bending them to our will is certainly one of those things that might be a lot easier than having to reinvent the insect.
Yeah. You know? And we've talked about this a tiny bit before in our episode about bees, the future of bees.
Robo bees.
Right. That was published in May of 2014, if you want to go back and listen to it.
Yeah, I think we also – is that the one where we talked about the Delphi Micro, the tiny little extremely small drone, the battery lasts a few minutes?
We talk a lot about insects on this show. When Jonathan isn't around, so I
feel so special to be here today.
No. That one was not insect at all. That was full drone.
Oh, the purely
the
mechanical
Delphi
one.
Oh, right.
Well,
right.
There were actually
it
quite a few.
It might have been in our drone episode, but
okay.
Yeah, there are actually quite
if
a few.
If anyone remembers our episodes better than we do, then let us know, guys.
Send us a message. But no, there definitely are big issues there. Like the idea of having to power the flight. Definitely has its own engineering problem. Whereas if you're using a flying insect, since we already talked about it, has that onboard power system
done.
Already.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've already taken care of that. As long as whatever payload the insect is carrying isn't so heavy as to prevent it from flying, you're good to go.
Okay. And I think we should acknowledge, though we should save it for another podcast, the fact that, if you're not having ethical problems with insects, you might as well push it a little farther and create some cyborg mammals to do your reconnaissance for you. Why not Borg bats, Borg rats? People are working on stuff like this, and this should be a whole other Creepy Times podcast for us.
Yeah. Maybe
let's not hog the creepy in this one.
Maybe we'll spread it out by putting some happy fuzzy episodes between now and then.
We'll talk about the future of cuddling.
Yeah, well...
with rats that will one day become cyborgs.
I don't think it'll be the cuddle app, but that's a different show entirely.
I've got a piece of listener mail that I think we should get into.
Let's hear it, Joe.
Before we wrap it up for today, unless y'all have anything else.
No,
that is about all I have to say about cyborg insects.
Yeah, I'm ready to bug out of this one.
Oh, okay, well. No. But no, we get such terrific letters from you guys sometimes, and so we are going to start a listener mail section.
Yeah,
well, so often it's the request to do a certain kind of episode, mm-hmm. and we've turned some of those into episodes. This wasn't that, so I just thought I'd read it. This was from Katie on Facebook.
She says, I thought you'd be amused to know that while listening to your podcast on catching a time traveler, just as you began giving time travelers incentives to show up and announce themselves, my iPod went from more than 70% charged to flat dead.
Ooh.
I seriously had a moment where I believed that a time traveler was going to show up and announce themselves to me right then and there. It turns out this didn't happen. And I continue to be disappointed with people of the future.
Yeah, clearly the people of the future could teach Generation X a thing or two about really being slackers.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I thought I knew everything there was to know about being a slacker.
You know, Katie, if you want to write us back, what I actually want to know now is which part of the incentives we were talking about when that happened. Like, was it the part about humiliating Jonathan or the part about promising them riches and fame?
I think the humiliating Jonathan has got to be the right answer, because that's the biggest temptation of anyone I know.
Aww.
No, they seem to take every opportunity.
Don't encourage him, Lauren.
All right, well, let's wrap this up. If any of you guys have some fun comments, or you have questions, or you have suggestions for future episodes, let us know. Send us an email. Our address is fwthinking@howstuffworks.com, or drop us a line on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+. At Twitter and Google+, we are fwthinking. Just search fwthinking, and Facebook will pop right up. And leave your comment there. We read all of them. We really look forward to them. And we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.